Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today my guest is author J.R. Maxson. He is joining us to talk about his just-published novel, Rebecoming, The Way of Opportunity. And this book is really the result of years of inquiry, study, and life experience that really ends up being J.R.'s way of passing on the truths that he has learned about life along his journey. So J.R. Maxson is a geologist and visionary fiction writer who currently lives and writes in his childhood home on an island on the sun coast of Florida. J.R. has a bachelor and master's of science degrees in geology and geochemistry, and his love of science has taken him back in time and into the depths of the earth. He has been a national and international petroleum exploration manager and is a certified petroleum geologist. His other interests include spirituality, writing, teaching, global warming, astronomy, and archaeology. J.R.'s new book, Rebecoming, The Way of Opportunity, addresses questions that we have all had regarding the most essential truth of life, love, and happiness. It is a story that gives readers the tools and the courage needed to transcend their destiny. And I am just so happy to have J.R. on the program today, and I believe I'm going to be referring to him as Rolf through the interview because that is really his name. So welcome to the program, Rolf.
Thank you, Juanita. I am pleased to be here.
Well, wonderful. I just want to thank you. You know, this is your first book. It sounds like you have many more to come. And this is a novel, but really it's much more than simply a novel.
Yes, it is, Juanita. There's a lot of nonfiction self-help books on the market right now. But what I have found is that people learn easily, more easily through a story. So what I have done is I have created a novel. It falls into the visionary fiction category of writing. That has a very interesting, compelling story full of the timeless lessons that we need to live our lives every day.
So who is your intended audience then, Rolf?
The actual intended audience is all women from ages 18 to up, really, till they're into their senior citizen years. Women that are, their main character is 33 in the book. So women, for example, from age, say, the late 20s to the early 40s, could identify with her as a peer. Older women, senior citizen women, can look back to her and say, this is the way my life could have gone. This is the things that could have happened to me. And they can look back and smile. Plus, they can use perhaps the lessons in this book to guide their own children and their grandchildren. Younger women in their teens and 20s can look up to Diana Archer, the main character in the book, as a mentor, someone that they can study, follow, to perhaps avoid some of the mistakes that Diana made in her life.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the significant others of these women, their husbands, boyfriends, will love to read this book because it gives a lot of insight into how women really think and the things that kind of go on in their life, and it will lead them to be able to develop much stronger relationships full of loving kindness and compassion for each other.
That's so interesting. I love that idea. Was it a stretch for you to write with the intention of writing for women and with such a strong lead character?
Well, I was raised by my mother and my grandmother, and I helped raise my younger sister. Plus, I'm a very good listener, and I feel that today is the time. Women need to be strongly empowered. I've seen it come through the feminist movement, you know, the New Age women's movement, etc. And we see today, women are now secretaries of state. I believe we'll have a women president one day. They need to be empowered. They need to move forward and really begin to take their rightful place. Alongside them. Plus, a lot of women have had a lot of problems in their lives due to the sort of patriarchal society that we've had. This needs to end now, and we need to strongly move forward together, united. This is the way we need to move into this new millennium.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Rolf, because I've heard that before, that it really is women going through this transformation that is going to really instigate the major changes that we're going to see in the future.
Yes, this is. I really strongly believe that. This is the time for us to work together on this. I don't want this to be kind of divisive. Some books are written as a divisive, you know, men are separate from women, etc. No, yes, we are separate in our own individual bodies, but we really are together. And if we work together on this, if we have loving kindness and compassion for each other, then the future can be very, very bright.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that women going through this will be teaching or showing the way for men?
Yes, actually I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that women can really now, they're the nurturers of our society. They really raise, you know, the children that are of our society. Not that men don't participate in that. I'm not meaning to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that a strong female, feminine influence right now is what's needed. We've had all of the wars. We've had all the divisiveness. We've had all the conflict. We now need to turn away from that to more nurture each other, for example, just like a mother does her precious child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So interesting. So you mentioned this genre of novel being visionary fiction. You know, we hear of it also being called spiritual fiction. It's really becoming a very inspirational field of writing that is rising in popularity. So why do you think that people are really responding so well to this type of novel?
I believe that it's because we need to take out the old tools again, the ancient tools that have been around for millennia, and use them in our lives again. We'll use them to guide our lives. This book, you know, it's in the genre of visionary fiction, which covers a lot of different topics, etc., health, spirituality, love, well-being, relationships, romance, etc. And so it encompasses a lot of territory. Plus, people want to read an inspiring story. And in most visionary fiction novels today, the main characters, and in the recent past, the main characters are generally men. So I decided to write this from a female viewpoint. It's first person, so the readers can get right into the character's head, gives them a very strong and immediate sense of identification with Diana, the main character.
So tell us a little bit about her then, and the path that she's on, and the actual storyline of this book.
What Diana is someone we've either known, have known, know, or will become. She's overworked, she's stressed. She's out of weight, overweight, out of shape. She's not really taking care of herself. She's really living more for her job and for other people. So Diana has a very dramatic, you know, incident that happens to her early in the book. And this changes her view. She knows she needs to become different. She needs to change. But she does this under her own power. She doesn't run to someone else and have them fix it for her. She does encounter a teacher, and they work together, but she does this on herself. So what the storyline really is to take a modern woman, a modern tale today, and she changes through the tale, she grows through the tale, and in the end she becomes successful. And as I say, it's a tale of today that will change everyone's future forever.
Powerful. Okay, so start then by explaining to us, please, what is re-becoming?
Re-becoming is actually an old word. And I was drawn to it because I wanted a title that applied both at a small scale, for example, individual, and at a larger scale, indeed this entire country and the whole world. It's, as I said, an old word, and it's a word you sometimes see in spiritual texts. But what I've done is I've slightly retooled it. I've changed it to fit more into our society today. And my concept of re-becoming is what I would call a conscious reawakening. It's like a moment-to-moment do-over. And in the book, it's defined as it's a personal process of continuous change, because we change continually every day, facilitated by a person's desire and belief, because without desire and without belief, there will be no change, that they can re-aim their intention, the direction of their life, re-energize their mind, rebuild their bodies, because I believe that spirituality and physical fitness, physical strength, not necessarily weightlifting strength, but physical fortitude, are very important and should work together. They can relinquish unskillful choices. I mean, as it says, how many of us have moments we'd rather forget? We can relinquish our unskillful choices, plus we can recognize and redefine our happiness. And this is exactly what's happening in our country today. We're trying to recognize what makes us happy and redefine that. Then, with this, we can re-become. We can become kind, kinder, we can live happier lives, and we can work together as a unit, both within ourselves, with our significant others, within our communities, within our country, and within our planet.
And so this is all very much done on a conscious level. So where have we been before we're becoming conscious? What's been going on?
Well, what's happened, I believe, is that people have gotten hung up in looking at their own selfish needs. I hate to use the term selfish. It has a very strong connotation. But they're looking more toward what's in it for me rather than what's in it for my for all of us, for my family, for the country, etc. And I think we're seeing that today, that this is not going to work anymore. That this unbridled, I hate to use the term greed, that's a strong word too, but this unbridled greed, this unbridled need to fulfill everything on a very short-term basis is killing not only ourselves, but our planet as well.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me that you're not just talking about a spiritual awakening, but it's really an awakening into a unity consciousness.
Yes. One of the symbols on the book is the rabbit and the moon.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
All right, well, I will go forward with that right now then. This is from an old story, 2,500 years old, about a kind rabbit that used to assist lost travelers. Then, at a defining moment, he offered to make the ultimate sacrifice to give his life to save a mother that was starving and her children that were starving. And for his kindness and generosity, his portrait was painted on the moon. So everyone on this planet, all 6 billion people, can see a full moon. You know, every month when we have the full moon, they can see this. This connects all of us to the rabbit. Shows us that kindness and generosity are within all of us. Indeed, one of my mottos or logos from this book is having the rabbit in the moon. Over the top, it will say, "Choose kindness over rightness."
That's so powerful. Rolf, what has been your personal influences, your specific spiritual philosophies that you've studied or books that have really made a mark on you?
Well, to be honest, there's been a lot of them.
I bet.
I've been really on this path since I was a late teenager. I had an insight one evening. A group of friends of us grew up on the north end of this island, and there used to be a lot of white sand dunes and things like that, having a bonfire and roasting marshmallow and doing things that teenagers do. And what happened was, all of a sudden, there was like this defining moment in which I recognized that the core inside my life, inside me, was happiness. Not the discomfort, not the dissatisfactions, not the sufferings that I had been through, you know, in my life, but happiness. And it's taken a long time, and I made a lot of detours and things like that before I really came to know that on an internal, you know, a strong internal level. So what I have done for many years is I have studied with various spiritual teachers from a number of spiritual traditions. I have written small articles and things like that. This is my first major work, but I have written small articles and done some things like that to try to help people. I've done some counseling and consulting with people, you know, on an individual basis. But what I have really learned is that we are all one. And I know this is an old, you know, kind of people's kind of a worn out kind of a comment, you know, that we are all one, but we are all interconnected, and what each one of us does is important to the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what has come through to me from my teachers and from my own study.
When you really look to the core of so many different spiritual teachings, that's really it, isn't it?
Exactly. Everyone, kindness and generosity. Mm. As Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. And that's really what I think we need to do now. The country is going through a period of wrenching dislocation. You know, our lives seem awry and there's a lot of dissatisfaction. And instead of being bitter about this, instead of being resentful about this, I mean, I've had some heavy blows in my life. Instead of being bitter or resentful, we need to turn kindness and compassion toward one another. If someone loses their job, help them. See if you can help them in some way. If you lose your job, you should be able to rely on your neighbors and on your friends. And I'm not saying for monetary things necessarily, but just for the understanding.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we need today to set things aright. And, you know, this book, it's very interesting, the timing of this. I wrote this several years ago, and it's gone through several revisions. But a lot of things in my own life have kind of delayed this. And now I see that this is perfect, in my opinion, perfect message for today.
Mm-hmm.
Choose this kindness over rightness. Let's let go of the divisiveness, let go of the bitterness, and let's not be resentful. We can all be happy as a country and as a planet.
It is so timely, and I just don't think that it's a coincidence that you had, you know, delays that put it off until today. I think this has come out in divine timing.
Yes, so do I. The delays that happened were very painful. I would not have wanted to go through these or go through them or have anyone go through them, to be quite honest. But what it has done is it's put this message right out now. It's coming out right now, right when I think we need it.
Yes. Let me ask you, Rolf, why do you think that typically we have to go through so much suffering before we really accept a spiritual path?
You know, I've been uncertain about that, you know, for some time. Some people seem to wake up to a spiritual path of their spirituality earlier, but there seems to be an old aphorism, a truism, some people say, that there's no spiritual growth without pain. And by pain, I mean mental pain, not physical pain, although physical pain can enter into this. And in my own life, I thought, well, you know, I can avoid that. I'm gaining this knowledge. I can avoid that. But I see now that I could not. So I don't really have an exact answer for that, except to say, when you are going through these things, when you're going through times that will try your soul, as my grandmother would have said, it is a part of the growth process. And when you come out the other side, you're stronger, you're happier, you see life more as a whole rather than individual pieces. And it really, then, the core of happiness can really come through. It really can.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there a difference between re-becoming and just the normal course of life where change happens?
Well, for most people, or I should say many people, maybe not most, but for many people, change just seems to happen. Life just seems to go on. They're making choices every day about things that they're doing in their lives, but they really are not aware of it. What re-becoming means is to become aware of this, to have a willing mind and become aware of the changes in the choices that you make in your life. For example, one of the things in the book is learn to choose your choices. Many people feel in their lives that they don't have much choice, and for some that's probably true at this present time. But by a slow process of understanding and looking at every choice that's made, you can begin to choose things that bring you happiness rather than longer term happiness rather than short term pleasure. And as you begin to do this, the negative things begin to drop away in your life, maybe not immediately, but they begin to drop away in your life, and then you can move forward.
Okay, so tell us what the way of opportunity means. What do you mean by that? This is the subtitle of this book.
Mm-hmm. Well, the definition that I use in the book is the continual practice of making skillful choices. There's a difference between skillful choices and unskillful. Skillful choice is one that brings happiness and contentment into your life on a long-term basis. An unskillful choice does the opposite, with a calm and willing mind. Many of us are so stressed out. I was in the oil business for a long time, and it was a very stressful industry. Many people are very stressed out, they're overworked, and they make their choices without being calm and looking at them carefully. And a willing mind, you need to be willing to do this. You need to be willing to look at your choices on a daily basis.
And curious, too, I imagine.
Yes, that's true. I've always had a strong sense of curiosity, and so doing this and doing the research for this book and the experiences I've had in my life have really, you know, the more I study, the more curious I become about human nature and about how we really do make these choices. Because I believe that choice is a very important feature of life. And it's just, as I've said, all of life is but a parade of choices. Plus, I believe that the most important lesson a parent can teach a child is how to make skillful choices. Yes, they can teach them a lot of other things, I understand, but the most important to me is how to make skillful choices. And I was very blessed that my grandmother and my mother taught me that from an early age. And then by making these skillful choices, you will recognize appropriate opportunities. You know, a lot of opportunities that are offered to us really might not be that appropriate for where we are right then. And then this will lead to a much more expansive way of life and a complete renewal.
So are you saying that making right choices open up opportunity for you, or are you saying each time you make a choice is the opportunity?
It could be looked at actually both ways.
Okay.
Every choice that you make changes your life path slightly. And so that opens up whole new directions, whole new opportunities. And even the small choices can do this. I can look back at my life and see where I made some very, at the time, they seemed very simple, very small choices about things that later on turned out to have a very, you know, great impact on my life. Now, opportunity to me, to give you my definition here, my interpretation, is like a conveyor belt, kind of, or like a smorgasbord of people and events that are coming into your life as you move through time. But instead, you know, you hear people talk about these missed opportunities and things like that. But instead of thinking about what's been missed or what's gone by, know that opportunity will come again. It's like, to me, like the waves on an ocean. A surfer, and I've done a lot of surfing when I was a teenager, a surfer paddles out and then he watches the wave. And he knows that he'll catch one. Maybe one he'll try to catch and it'll go past him. But instead of being despondent and giving up, he just turns around, paddles back out, and watches and waits for the next wave. He prepares for that with his willing mind and his strong body for the next wave coming along. And eventually he'll catch one and ride all the way into the shore, ride all the way into the successes of life.
I love that. You know, that takes out the whole sort of negative vibration of regret.
I believe that regret is like a fear of the past. You've done things, or perhaps things have happened that you wish had not happened. And one of my teachers told me, it's all right to look at the past, just don't stare.
That's great.
And so some of these things have happened, and a lot of cruel things have happened to people. But what I like to believe is that you can put those in a closet or put those away in your mind and move forward and not let them affect your entire life, not let them affect you years into the future. I know some things will do that. I haven't experienced some of the cruelties that you hear, you know, put on people around the world. So I don't know how I cannot identify with those physically or myself because I have not experienced them. But I know that if you let go of the negativity of the past and any resentment, bitterness, etc., regret, as you said, you can move forward. You can have a much happier life.
So do you feel that it is important, though, to reflect back on situations just in a way to maybe see what choices you made that led to maybe a negative outcome so in the future you can make new choices?
Yes, actually I do. As I said, I like to look back into my own life and say things that I could have done differently that might have turned out better or happier for me. One, for example, was debt. When I first got out of college, you know, I was very excited. I had a new job, you know, et cetera, a new girlfriend. So I spent and spent and spent. And I spent myself into a point where my salary did not cover my bills. Well, it took a long time to work out of that. So I learned from that negative opportunity of that debt, I learned that I needed to watch my finances and be very careful with it. And I believe that by looking back at situations in a person's life, not staring at them, not concentrating or allowing it to rule your present life, but by looking at them, you can learn from them, and then you won't make the same, you know, mistakes again, hopefully.
So interesting. So talk to us, Rolf, about life's purpose. This is a theme that runs throughout your book. It's one I know is very close to your heart. So talk to us a little bit about it, and do you feel that we each have a unique life's purpose, or is generally at the foundation our life's purpose all the same?
Well, I believe the purpose or the core of life is happiness. And I believe that this blazes inside each one of us. Like you use the imagery like a blue-white sun is blazing inside of us. But because of the influence of negative thoughts that seem to dominate a lot of our minds most of the time or for quite a bit of the time, this makes people feel or believe that happiness doesn't exist, that it's not there, or at least it's not for them. But joy can be there every day. And it's not necessarily always hidden. It can be right in front of you. And what I believe life's purpose is to develop this joy, a spacious joy inside yourself, which leads to equanimity. You look at everyone else the same way as equals. And to me, that this is the true equality in life, that we can all look at each other as equals, that we can all look at each other joyously. We can all see the divine, the spiritual inside us, sometimes called the self. So to me, life purpose is to rid ourselves of self-defeating thoughts, you know, let these go, that lead to the unskillful actions that cause us, you know, pain, suffering in our lives, and the poor results that come from these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, the good news is that most of our thoughts, negative thoughts, are based on fear. And there's essentially two kinds of fear. Fear that you're going to lose something you think you have, fear that you're not going to get something you think you deserve. And once you recognize that, you can let these fears go. You can move forward in a more joyous and happy, from a more joyous and happy position in your life, and you can then spread this and teach this to other people.
So really, the fear then, it sounds to me like that stems out of a need to control situations.
Yes, it can. Where to me, fear comes as I said, from the mind, from thoughts in the mind, that you're not going to get something you think you deserve or you're going to lose something you think you have. And this, to me, is the basis of anger. Anger comes from that, too. And a lot of people use anger to cover fear. They're afraid of something, but they use the anger to cover this up. So to me, as we said about the life purpose a moment ago, is to rid ourselves of these fears, or at least recognize them when they come up. That's an important thing, too, to just recognize them when they come up and then let them go. That way we can take control of our lives and our destinies and live for the better. And then we can change, not just let life change us.
And not let our emotions rule our lives, it sounds.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Hi there. Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with author Rolf Maxson, also known as J.R. Maxson. His new book, Rebecoming the Way of Opportunity, has just been published, and you can find out more about Rolf through his website, rebecomingbook.com.
Well, emotions are very important, and the way I look at a person, let's just say to use an analogy, would be like a horse and carriage, the old horse and carriage analogy, that the horse is like the emotion, the carriage is like the body, and the driver is the mind. But who we really are is we are the owners of the carriage. We're the owners.
Mm-hmm.
But if any of those get out of whack, as you can see, your old emotions run too wild, or the mind gets out of control, or the body falls apart, well, then we end up in a ditch. And what rebecoming is rebuild these, reintegrate them all together as a whole, and then move forward from a joyous spaciousness.
That is such a great analogy. I like that. So then when we talk about life's purpose, that's then very different from goals, aspirations, inherent gifts.
Right. I like to set goals in my life, you know, targets for the future and things like that, because it gives me a sense of direction, and then I can use kind of like a compass needle. Am I moving in the right direction? Am I moving toward this goal? But I recognize also that I cannot get attached to the goal. I can't say this is what I've got to have to make me happy, because every day with our choices, the goals will change, the things will shift. And if you get too attached to an outcome, well, then there comes back the suffering again, and then the fear, oh, I'm not going to get something I think I deserve. But if you can be flexible with your goals, I think they're a good thing. But if you're inflexible with them, they can lead to a very cramped lifestyle. I know that for a fact.
Sounds like you've had experience in that.
Yes. The companies I've worked for, you had to set budget figures every year. You had to set targets and goals, as all companies do. But if you didn't make them, well, you know, there was a lot of pain and suffering sometimes.
Yes. Okay. Another really interesting aspect of your book is the whole storyline with Diana around the physical fitness and the conditioning of the physical body. And I know that this is another topic that you hold very strongly in your own life. And so you brought that into your book. Diana begins working out at a gym. Her personal trainer becomes her spiritual teacher. So tell us a little bit about why the topic of the physical body is so important to rebecoming.
Well, the physical body is the carriage for our mind. Without the physical body, basically, we have nothing. And I think a lot of people forget that. So what I wanted to do in rebecoming is I wanted to tie the physical to the spiritual, to the mental, to the, of course, financial, etc. I wanted to tie all of these together. And I believe sometimes that a lot of people, they lose track of their purpose in life, or they lose track of their goals, as you just mentioned, because they let their bodies get out of shape. Now, I'm not advocating that somebody has to be a buff personal trainer or be able to bench press 225 pounds or run a marathon or something like that. But when the physical body is in good shape, the mind is calmer, the mind is more susceptible of pleasant things, there's less negativity involved, And I didn't set this book out, I'd set out to write this book as like a physical conditioning book or to make people feel that if they were somehow out of shape, that their life, you know, that their lives could be, or would be unhappy. But I do believe that there's a strong connection between a good, I call it a strong body, but what I mean by strong is one that's integrated, that's functioning well, rather than I'm strong meaning muscular strength.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, my grandmother had a thing that if you took care of your body, you know, carefully when you were younger, middle-aged, etc., then you would live a long and happy life, as they did. And I think sometimes in our hurry-up world today, we forget about this. We make the assumption that physical health, that our physical health will always be perfect. And then when something happens and it turns out that it's not perfect, and I've had my own share of the ills, let's say, it wakes you up to this. And then you really, once you wake up to this, you really see just how precious life is. And
mm-hmm.
when you see that, then you begin to live your life from a point of you have more equanimity, more understanding of other people, because you see that they suffer just as you do, or can suffer just.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. There's so much literature. There's so much thought that's put out there these days where the body, mind, and spirit it's all one. It really is all one. So if you you know, I like the way that you've added this physical component to this book. There are so many spiritual teachings that really talk about releasing attachment to physical form. And you're really saying that the physical is really part of the whole picture, the whole equation.
Yes, I do. I believe that, you know, the body is our carriage. We're here in these bodies. And if we care for them, they will last a long time. If we do not care for them or something like that, then they don't last as long, and there's no trade-in. There's nowhere else to go.
Mm-hmm.
And to just reiterate, I'm not saying that someone has to be, you know, Mr. or Mrs. America or Mr. Olympia or something like that. But having a healthy, functioning physical body, I believe, allows people to more fully develop their spirituality. But they can do this all simultaneously, unless they have to have one before the other.
Yes. And I imagine you also... This refers to food intake and nutrition as well, how you nourish your body.
Yes. I've had, you know, to be honest, I never had a pizza till I was 17.
Wow. So, how did that happen?
Well, there weren't any pizza places out here on the island.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I've always said, oh, I love pizza so much now because I was deprived, you know, as a child. But I believe that nutrition is one of the most important things, along with exercise. And there's so many different products out there today, I think that it's sometimes very difficult to choose a nutritious diet. And as we've talked about, the overwork, the stress, the hurry-up, etc. I mean, I used to spend an hour each day, an hour twice a day in commute. And when you do that, your tendency is not to treat your body well, to eat fast or not eat well, etc. And I believe that that's not... shouldn't be done, that you should really, your body is absolutely very important to you, and you should treat it just as well as you can with nutrition. So what I try to do is, I'm not one for these what I call unbalanced diets, you know, eat all of one thing or nothing of something else,
mm-hmm.
but just a balanced, even diet which can be done. And I have emphasized in the book that I believe a lot of problem comes, and this is my own belief, comes from too much fat. There's a lot of fat and salt in our food, and I think if you cut those back, you know, to reasonable levels, then your body will naturally begin to adjust, and you'll naturally begin to become the weight you would like or the shape you would like and go from there. But as I said, I'm not emphasizing this in the book as a, you know, that someone has to look a certain way or be a certain way in order to be able to develop their spirituality. But I definitely believe it contributes to it.
Yes.
In a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the fear that is really rampant on the planet right now, and the outer manifestation can be different. For some, it's the economy. For another, it might be a relationship problem. Another, it may be an illness that they're facing or the illness of a loved one. But in all, it's still fear. So we've talked about that. So what would your initial advice be for someone that is recognizing that they are really in that state of fear? What are some practical steps that they can take to actually get out of that cycle?
The first would be to identify it and recognize that you are afraid, that the person is afraid. This is covered up a lot of times, as I said, with anger you know, with other things, but to recognize that the fears are there and that the fears are real. I mean, the fear of financial insolvency, for example, the number two fear in this country, is very real right now. And recognize that these fears are there and then begin to make the skillful choices to reduce their potency. This, it's not done overnight. You know, you cannot reverse a lot of situations in life overnight. But once you begin the steady process of identifying the fear on a daily basis, for example, and then making the choices to move away from that, choices that will lead to happiness, not to fear. For example, if someone with financial issues learns to spend money on the things that you need or the things that bring long-term happiness rather than just a short-term fix. In a relationship, a lot of relationships are not so healthy, and they're not very, sometimes not very easy to get out of right away. So on a daily basis, learn to change your own behavior, change your own thoughts to lead you then away from that relationship if necessary, and into or toward ones that will be more healthy for you.
Great advice. And I imagine takes some time out to maybe practice gratitude or enjoy the little things as well.
Yes, and I think that's what we're coming back to now, looking at what do we truly need from our lives, what do we really want to get. And, you know, there's a thing that says, you know, life is all just small stuff. Life is all just details. But take joy in the details. Take joy in breathing. Take joy in feeling your heartbeat and the heartbeats of your companion, or your significant other, you know. I mean, a lot of times, for example, my grandmother would say, when you wake up in the morning, say, "Good morning, Lord," not "Good Lord, morning." And so another one of my teachers said to me, he said, "Don't ever forget, we don't know what comes next, tomorrow or the next life. So live every day as if tomorrow might be the next life, and you would be joy, you know, so you would live your day joyously. You would take care of people. You would understand that they hurt like, just like you do, so you would do nothing to increase that or cause any more of that in their lives. And once you begin to make these choices on a daily basis with a calm and willing mind, it really is a miraculous, I've seen, with a number of people. Your life will begin to spiral out of this, out of the pit, for example, of despair, out of the pit of resentment and fear, and into the light. And I've seen this happen very, very quickly. For some people it takes longer, but I've actually seen this happen very quickly, because as you develop a more positive outlook toward life, and I know this is the old positive thinking, but I do believe it works, a more positive outlook toward life, then more positive opportunities come to you.
It's like you attract it to yourself.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I know that's kind of a metaphysical concept, but I believe that a positive mental attitude and a positive outlook toward life, then more positive things will flow into your life. Very similar to the tithing. Give some out, and more comes back.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting, and if someone that may be a little skeptical on that, you know, it just kind of came to me. You know, you can, in the course of a day, smile at, say, 10 strangers and see how many smile back at you. I mean, that's just a really simple experiment you can do for yourself on the whole way that you can attract what you put out.
I try to smile at someone every time I meet them. I try to see the divine in each person every time I meet them. Now, sometimes that's tough, but I try to do that every time. And what I have found is that most people, all that most people really want is a kind word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want someone to understand that they suffer too, that they may be in pain too. And all they really would like is a kind word. And it costs the person
nothing
to smile at someone,
mm-hmm.
nothing to thank someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old things that we learned as children, you know, say please and then say thank you. You know, and most people, that it will make their day. They light right up. And who knows, maybe you relieve something. Maybe they had some very unhappy thoughts going through their mind right that moment, and you've relieved that for them for a little while anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's so simple.
It really is, you know. It really is.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, to me it's a gift to be simple, and I don't mean simple in a negative sense, but not to be so tied down with all of the heaviness that we sometimes load on each other.
Mm.
And on ourselves, primarily.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have actually 3 more books coming out in this series?
What I'm doing is, this is to be my life's work now. And the Rebecoming the Way of Opportunity is the first, is what's going to be a series of 4 novels.
Mm-hmm.
Then, in addition to this, I have 3 nonfiction books that will accompany this, so sort of like opportunity guides, experiential guides, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working part-time on a photography book that will have beautiful photographs overlaid with quotes from the Rebecoming book, and those kind of a coffee table type book. The second book, which is going to be the prequel to Rebecoming, will be a lot more about the trainer. The third book, which will be the sequel to Rebecoming, The Way of Opportunity, the trainer and Diane are going to have some adventures that nobody has ever written about, I don't
think. Oh, interesting.
And then in the fourth book, we're going to take this out into the world. We're going to show how the world can be remade and the world can be rebecome. Because as I said, everyone on this planet can see the rabbit in the moon. Everyone can be the kindness of the rightness.
Oh, that's so fantastic. So will we see some more male characters come into play, obviously with the trainer and in the prequel?
Yes, we will. It's going to be based loosely on growing up on an island, because when I grew up out here, it was something I didn't recognize at the time. But later on, looking back, growing up on an island, you see things differently than people growing up on the mainland, let's just say. You tend to see things more as a whole rather than in pieces, and you tend to see things more from a larger perspective, perhaps, than, you know, the smaller or more cramped perspective. So, yes, I'm going to bring in characters that are people I've known during my life. Of course, as you know, in any novel, almost all characters in most novels are based on things that people know about other people,
mm-hmm.
how you put them together and make them unique. But there will be other male characters, there will be other female characters, and there's going to be other characters in the sequel to Rebecoming, The Way of Opportunity, that have never been written about before, to my knowledge.
Oh, gosh, well, that is intriguing. You're really captivating me.
Well, my plan right now, the prequel is almost finished.
Okay.
And the sequel is underway. And so my hope is to try to put out the second book within the next year,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps the sequel, you know, right after that. Of course, this depends upon time and things like that. But I really want to carry this message out to the world now, because I really think this is what we need, and we have the chance now. It's kind of painful, I know. I mean, all of us are feeling this pain right now. But I think we have the chance to really step into the new millennium, to really push forward as a unified whole. I mean, not just within ourselves, within our family units, you know, our communities, our towns, et cetera.
And
it's my goal.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it sounds to me that what you're really wanting to convey to people as well is that each one of us has to make that decision and make that change, and it will just snowball around us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
My plan is to attempt to release this message to as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that you're quite correct. I believe it will snowball. I believe, though, that it's going to start with the women in our society. If you go
mm-hmm.
back to what we talked about early on, I believe that the women in our society are going to be some of the prime movers, the prime drivers of this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You are having such wonderful feedback at this point from readers who have gotten advanced copies of your book and have seen your work. So that must just be so rewarding. I mean, you're obviously right on cue at this point.
Yes, I believe so, and it is, quite honestly, it is very rewarding. Let me quote just from a couple of lines.
Sure, sure.
One of them says, "This book is absolutely about finding your spirituality, but it's also an explosion of joy at your life or the promise of what it can be. I really love this book. It made me sad, happy, and willing to work even more on my spiritual side." But I think one of the most powerful ones to me, one that fits exactly where we are today, it says, this is from a second reviewer. "I believe all readers will agree that this book is life-changing. Just reading it gives one hope for a future out,
mm.
a future without fear." And that's what we need today.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
"Look to the future, as Diana says in the very first chapter. I know I need to look to the future and to the good.
Mm.
And when I find it this time, I'm going to recognize.
Very powerful. Now, your website, Rolf, is rebecomingbook.com, and I know that you have some big plans for your website.
Yes, right now it's still, you know, being worked on. I mean, if any website is ever
correct, sure.
finished. I have a couple of short videos out there now. I'm preparing a video that's coming that's going to be, you know, about the book itself. But what I really want for the website is many people, the very stressful lives. They have long days. They work very hard. There's long commutes. You know, taking care of children can be stressful, etc. I want the website to be a place where people can go and relax for a few minutes. They can look at the imagery that's going to be there. If it is there and it's going to be there, they can relax. They can find like a respite, a quiet place at the end of the day. I don't want the website to be just a brochure for the book or a sale for the book or books that are coming. But what I want it to be is so someone can go and just rest their eyes for a few minutes, listen to the music, just rest their body and just take it easy, you know, as they go into their evenings or perhaps first thing in the morning so they have a happier day. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be continually changing. I'm going to continually add to it and continually make it grow. Eventually, I'm going to have like a newsletter, electronic newsletter that will come out. There will be questions and answers and things, because what I would like is for people to be able to go there and find answers to questions they may have about the book. So as people send me questions, send me insights, I intend to post them out there so everyone can see, you know, what other people are thinking, what other people are saying, and perhaps their insights, you know, in addition to mine, will help them lead better lives, happier lives.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy to be talking to you now while you're just in the initial steps of this whole, your life work. I mean, this is really, at this point, your future work.
Yes, it really is. You know, like the old song, you know, I've only just begun.
Mm-hmm.
This to be my life's work now. I was a geologist for a long time, and I know a lot about the Earth, and I intend to, of course, bring in the parts about global warming and mm-hmm. things like that where appropriate. But this is to be my life's work. I want people to live happier lives. I want us to survive as people. I want the planet to survive. And, you know, I believe I can make a contribution to that.
It's interesting with your work in geology. We'll have to save this for our next conversation. I know we have many to come, but your work in geology, I mean, you can look at that metaphorically and you know, just going for treasures that are deep in the earth and deep within us. You know, I see a lot of interesting connections with what you're doing now, but we'll save that for next time. Okay. Well, did you have any final thoughts then, Rolf, that you wanted to just convey to our audience before we close today?
No, I think we've talked about a lot of different things, but as I said, my hope and my purpose with this book is that readers will read this book, read it, enjoy it, and it is my greatest wish that as someone reads this book, that loving kindness will come to them and allow them to create the happier lives that they have always desired.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for coming on the program today, Rolf. You take care, and we'll talk again.
You're very welcome, Juanita, and I really appreciate being here and talking to you today.
You bet. All right, listeners, that's been Rolf Maxson, also known as J.R. Maxson. His book, Rebecoming the Way of Opportunity, has just been released. It's just hot off the press, so please do check it out. Rolf's website is rebecomingbook.com, and as he mentioned, he will be adding more and more to that in the coming weeks and months, so stop in frequently because he'll have new information up there. His book can be purchased through his website as well as through online booksellers, and you can also order it through your local bookstore. So maybe support your local community by that. So I just thank you for listening to the interview today, for tuning into Inside Scoop Live. Once again, I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.